Hello, everybody. My name is Dominic Havegis. I'm going to do a presentation on e-presentation here for ERA. And what I would like to do is I want to talk to you about internet searches and computer forensics. I'm a computer forensics consultant. I work for a company called ProSearch. And although we do our main areas of e-discovery, we do a lot of collections and data collections from internet, which eventually gets brought to you as a lawyer for review and may eventually end up in court as evidence. So what I'd like to talk to you about today is the technical elements that we go through on how to collect data from the internet and how we manage it in such a way that it's eventually presentable to the people in the court and yourself as a solicitor. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about how the internet works, first of all, because we need to know how it works in order to understand how we get data from it and how do we preserve the metadata and the important information from it. We're going to be talking about in particular social media and how it has evolved over time and how it has changed our landscape on how we collect data and how and what exactly we collect from it. We're going to be going through some hidden evidence. And particularly, we're going to talk about some real life examples and how we collect data, because there's actually quite a lot of ways to do it. And you might be familiar with some. Some of them might be new, and others might be completely esoteric and weird to you. But this is something that we do from day to day life. What we won't talk about is anything too technical. So I am a forensic consultant. We deal with a lot of technical details and how we and technical forensic investigations, but this is not about that. This presentation is not anything about that. It's something to get you started in this field and to give you the knowledge that you will need to talk to about the people that are from my field. So it's aimed at an introductory level and from a non-technical perspective. It's really aimed at solicitors and judges who have a knowledge of what we do, but don't really know exactly what we do. I'm not a lawyer, first of all, so I'm a technical or technician in a sense, and I love computers and technology, but I'm not a legal expert, and I will try to avoid any legal considerations, any law speak, because that's not my field, essentially. And we don't really have all the answers here. You'll at the end of this presentation, you'll find that I do have some recommendations on how we do things and how you proceed in the future. But there's no clear-cut answer. There is no one answer that fits them all. So if somebody asks me, how do you collect data from the internet? There is no, the answer is always, well, it depends. What do you have? You know, based on certain considerations and certain things you might see on your data set, you might do one thing and you might do another at a different scenario. So we're going to try and see these different scenarios and talk about different aspects and pros and cons of all of them. And the main takeaway I would like you to see from this presentation is what not to do. Some of the most simplest things that you might think are, you know, obvious, you shouldn't do because of certain implications down the road. And we'll talk about them at the end of the presentation. What I always like to do in these types of technical presentations is give you a real life scenario, a real life case that you may have heard in the news and that you might relate to once we're talking about some of the technical aspects that may seem obtuse or at least just non-practical. I like to talk about Elon Musk. He was very, very much in the news today or in this last few weeks. But when I wrote this presentation a few months ago, he was still in the news. So he likes to keep in the news and he likes to do different things. What I want to talk about him is one of his legal cases. And it is where he was sued by the SEC, the Stock Exchange Commission in the US, for possible market manipulation. So the setup is this. In a couple of years ago, 2018, as you know, Elon Musk is big in Twitter. As you know, he owns it now, but he's a big user of it as well. And he has 77 million followers. He sent a tweet out in 2018 saying that he has enough money to take Tesla, the electric car company he's a CEO of, private, as in take all the shares and be the sole owner of it. It was retweeted 14,000 times. It was liked by 84,000 of his users. But the SEC doesn't like this because it is a stock manipulation. They think that he's misleading the investors on what he's going to do. He doesn't actually take a Tesla private. Doesn't happen. So the stock market fluctuates between what he says and what he doesn't do. So they have a little squabble, and they agree that in the future there will be a company lawyer from Elon Musk, from Tesla, essentially, that would review all Elon Musk's tweets in regard to Tesla. And there's some other agreements that Elon Musk made, basically that he will never do it again or not do something like that again. But anyway, he continued on tweeting. And in November 2021, he creates a poll survey on Twitter asking whether he should sell 10% of his stake in Tesla. And, you know, tweets as again, he has more followers now than before, and they all answer, and they answer in the positive that he should sell 10%. Tesla shares go up and down again based on his tweets, and because he's selling 10%, they slump. They are now worth less. Just before he sent this poll out, Kimball Musk, his brother, who also sits on the board of directors of Tesla, sells a lot of his shares for Tesla, about $180 million. But obviously, because the Tesla shares were lower the day after the poll, his market sell-off was a very good time, because if he had sold it the day after, he would have gotten a lot less money for it. So again, the Stock Exchange doesn't like that. Exchange Commission doesn't like this. Did Kimball Musk know that Elon Musk was going to create this poll and reduce the value of his shares? And did he then act accordingly? Is this manipulation or market manipulation? Sorry. And how do we preserve the evidence of the tweet and anything possibly that Kimball Musk might have said on social media? So this is what we this is the problem that SEC was presented with. If they were going to go with suing Elon Musk, they had to preserve this Twitter poll, and they had to preserve whatever Kimball Musk may have said on his social media as well. It might not be relevant down the line, but the Twitter poll is extremely relevant, and the way to preserve that would make or break the case down the line. So this is what we're talking about. How do we preserve Twitter evidence, tweets? And how do we preserve, for example, maybe Facebook evidence or other internet evidence? So in this case, we have just two users and we have two Twitter feeds, but we've got tens of thousands of tweets. We've got Facebook and we have other social media. And we need to preserve this sequentially. Once you're doing internet collections and social media collections, it's very easy to start with just one tweet, let's say the Elon Musk poll, and it balloons out into other areas. So Elon Musk has 10,000 tweets, has 77 million users. How many people have responded or replied to his tweet saying something relevant? Do we need to preserve that? Did he say anything else about Tesla in the week before or week after of that tweet? Was there any evidence online and social media related to this case that the SEC may want to preserve? And me, as you may well know yourself, if you have Twitter, you may have Instagram, you may have Facebook, you may have other social media as well that you constantly use together. So not only do you have Twitter, but you have also Facebook. In this case, Elon Musk doesn't have Facebook, I don't believe, or doesn't use it very often, but Kimball Musk does. So maybe he has posted some tweets around this time that would corroborate what Elon Musk was doing. Now, obviously, this is a very naive case from my perspective. I'm only looking at the evidence with social media. But if this is a real, well, in the real life, what SEC would have done is they've got would have gone to other areas of evidence, like his computer or his personal correspondence or his emails. What we're looking at is social media only, and we're going to limit to that for today. The general forensic process is limited to five or six different steps. So I will briefly talk about the principles here to give you a sense of the topics that we're going to, the stages we're going to go in this social media investigation slash collection. So first of all, is the first case, is the first step even, is the identification step. Where is the data stored? Is it a social media website? Is it a computer? Is it a mobile phone? Once you have that information, in this case, we have Twitter and Facebook, how do we preserve that or how do we collect it? We'll talk about that in a minute. The examination phases, how do you examine this? You might think, well, we'll just read the emails or we'll just read the tweets. You can, yeah. One Twitter poll can be easily read, but Elon Musk has 77 million users or 77 million followers even. Let's say you need to review each of those replies to his Twitter poll, which could be thousands. So an examination may not just involve reading every single tweet, every single email, every single document. You may want to do some searches. You want to do some analysis, who replied to whom, and specifically, how did Kimball and Elon Musk communicate? Which that would also include some analysis. And finally, you have presentation, where you present the evidence you found, you've curated, and you have interpreted to the either the law firm that's working with you or the judge that you're presenting to in the case. What we do as forensic and practitioners, we follow four main principles, kind of tenets that kind of are guiding lights in all the investigations. They may not be applicable for all cases, but they seem to be general enough that they're flexible enough to give you a sign of a good solid investigation that you can rely on. The first is that once you have the data, or once you are collecting data, you are not to change it in any way. Now, it's not possible to change data from Twitter or Facebook, you might think. If you're investigating a mobile phone or a computer or some other digital device that you physically hold in your hand, it is very easy to change data because data is very sensitive. And any small thing that you do, like copying and pasting between different computers, may change some information that you might want to rely on. This is a rule that we try to follow stringently. Rule two is that if you do find it necessary to change data, or if you want to translate it somehow, interpret it somehow, you have to know what you're doing, and you have to be able to explain what you're doing in a sense that whatever changes you make are explainable and understandable and predictable. You don't want to just do a change or interpret or convert a document without knowing what it's doing. You may lose some relevance, or you lose some fidelity in changing. An example of this would be, for example, a picture. If you change a picture from one format to another, you might lose some fidelity and you might lose some detail. But equally, if you have a mobile phone, you have to turn it on to get the data. But the fact of you turning on the phone will change some data on the phone. But that's not avoidable. So you have to do it, and you have to explain that's done and why you're doing it. Rules three and four are for audit purposes and documentation purposes. And they're just there to say that, you know, the person who does this is ultimately responsible for the investigation itself and the evidence that's found. In this case, we're looking at internet forensics, and the rules, the ACPA rules, for example, the first one, we're not really able to change the internet at all, or are we? So let's talk about that. Let's talk about how internet works, how social media works, and are we able to influence that or influence the documents we see on the internet? You might think it's all readable or read-only and static and unchangeable. But that might not all be the case. So in order for us to collect the data and analyze it, we have to know where it's stored and how it's stored in the first place.